What's going on, y'all? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And like last time, sitting next to me is the man himself, Mr. Filio Thickneck Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm here, yes, in the brand new Skeleton Studios. I'm excited, man. I'm a little sunburned. We had a crazy 4th of July. And then after that, we just had another pool party, you know, because we weren't able to go to our friend's house for the 4th of July. Yeah. So we went over there a couple days later. So we've just been swimming and hanging out and just enjoying the summer. And we've got an impromptu baseball tournament coming up this weekend. I think it'll be the last one of the summer. And but besides that, man, I've been just doing the things of summer. We've been looking at lightning bugs in the evening. I've been eating corn on the cob.
I love corn on the knob.
Man, I really like corn on the cob. Like when it's just perfectly ripe and you got that butter on there and you put it on the grill, you know what I'm talking about? Man, that's just, that's one of my favorites. I know they say corn's not really good for you, but
What is?
I'm thinking, yeah, like processed corn, right? Like corn on the cob, how bad can that be? It's a vegetable.
I don't trust it.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, your parents were always trying to get you to eat vegetables. And one of the few ones that you would, you know, that I would enjoy, was, of course, was corn. You know, potatoes or corn. That was pretty much that, like, the staples. Like now I enjoy all types of
phallic-shaped vegetables.
Yes, phallic-shaped vegetables. And I still have a special place in my heart for corn.
I don't trust corn. I don't eat it. I don't trust it.
Every time I drive by a cornfield, though, now, I immediately think of the movie Signs.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great movie, right?
That was a good flick, yeah.
I went and saw that all by myself.
Did you really?
Yeah, my previous job years ago, I made my own schedule. And sometimes I would just, like, in the middle of the day, I'd just go see a movie by myself. And actually, I mean, it's pretty enjoyable because you don't have any distractions.
I went and saw The Village by myself.
See? Did you not enjoy it?
Oh, it was great.
Because you can really lock in and focus, right?
Oh, and it was like, when I went and watched it, it was during the week at like the 10:45 showing.
Yeah.
So there was literally nobody. And I walked in and sat down. I think there was one other person in there. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting.
I don't know what year the movie Signs came out, but I remember, you know, I've always been interested in extraterrestrials and abduction stuff. I was freaking out. I mean, like, I thought it was pretty good.
I liked it.
It still stands up. I watched it not too long ago on HBO.
I also like his Lady in the Water movie.
Oh, that was pretty
good. That's a good one. Because it's kind of fantasy-like, and I like that kind of stuff.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
He's had some real winners, and he's had some duds. Like, what was the one, The Happening or something, where nothing happened? Yeah, that was...
I didn't watch that one.
Hey, look, you can't bat 1,000. I'm not knocking him.
Some episodes are
better than others.
Exactly.
Speaking of episodes, I recently watched the new Missing 411.
But about the hunters.
Yeah, David Politis is at it again.
Seth is the one that told us about it.
It's out
at Mecha Grade. He sent me the message, and I didn't even know it was out.
Yeah, I didn't either. I saw it upcoming a couple weeks ago, but now it's out. You can actually buy it or rent it.
And you watched it.
I did. I rented it. And it's way better than the first one. The first one, I was disappointed. Now, I'm not harping on David.
We all were.
I enjoy his work. But, you know, the first one, the case he chose to profile, I was like, of all the strange cases in your books, this is the one? You know, for a person that's unfamiliar with his work, to suddenly watch that, I'm sure you were like, what's the big deal? These people killed their kids or whatever. But this new one, which specifically focuses on hunters, I actually enjoyed it. He really gets into some really cool, bizarre cases. And, you know, I implore everybody to go out there and get his books. Don't get them off Amazon. Just go to canamproject.com or whatever it is. And he's got a new book out even. I mean, he's pumping them out. But my favorites of all the ones he's done is probably the Eastern United States, the Western United States, and, of course, the hunters.
The hunters are my favorite,
because it kind of freaks me out because, you know, I'm in the woods sometimes hunting. And before I read those stories, you know, I would be creeped out about Bigfoot. But now it's, like, really creepy because, like, there's so many of these guys. They're experienced outdoorsmen. They have firearms, and they just, they're gone. They never find them. But I'll tell one story. Spoiler alert, folks. Towards the end, one of the sightings that they talk about is a glimmer man. This woman who's bow hunting in Ohio, I believe, is the state she was in. She saw what looked like the predator when it's cloaked, climbing from tree to tree. Now, I mean, we've been getting a lot of cases of these. We've had lots of people email the show recently. We're going to put that on a future episode. But this is a thing that we've kind of coined the glimmer man or the predator or whatever. And I didn't expect that to be on there. So go check it out. Go to iTunes. I don't know where else you can probably get it on Vimeo or Vudu or Heck, you might be able to get it on Amazon. I don't know, but I know definitely you can get it on iTunes. It's about $4.99 to rent, and it's pretty good.
It's on Amazon, I think, because I think I looked it up on there.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. Pretty cool. What have you been up to?
Man, oh, man, work, because we didn't do – I went to a – my wife had a – oh, like an office party for the 4th of July. So we went and did all that, right?
Yep.
Now, we did go play some disc golf while we were off for the trips or for the holiday. So after playing disc golf, I went and sat. And of course, I don't get in a pool. Everybody knows that. So I just kind of hang out. So I just hung out around the pool with everybody, but pretty much just did stuff with the fam, just hung out, you know, went and did. What did we go do? We were going to go to the movies. Now we're holding off because I'm going to go see that movie Crawl. So by the time
Luke is going to go check that out this Friday, actually. Yep,
we got to go watch that. So that'll be interesting.
I'm looking forward to The Lion King.
Me too.
I like the original. And the new one with the do the CGI and stuff now, it looks really cool.
Yeah. So, I don't know, just same stuff, same everything else. We'll just have to play it by ear from that point forward and see what goes on for the rest of what we've got planned for this week. But yeah, just been busy, just been going, getting everything set up at the studio, trying to get everything updated and uploaded, and it's kicking my butt. But
yeah, it's an experience, right? Every time you move, it doesn't have to be a studio. It could be moving from home to home. You don't realize how much stuff you have till you try to pack it up and move it.
Yeah.
And it's a pain.
It's ridiculous.
And I don't know about you, but I get very sentimental over things. I'm like, should I keep this? Oh, I should keep this. But then I'm like, well, I don't know why I should keep it. But
see, I don't.
Really?
My wife gets on to me because I don't get sentimental about anything.
I'm like, man, this was here when we first started. Yeah. Like, this soda can was here when we first started. You know, whatever it is. It could be something really minute.
A little tub that holds all the pens and pencils.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't want to get rid of that.
Like a bottle openers thing. Think like car. We got, you wouldn't believe like the gifts people send us.
Yeah.
From all types of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, postcards
them,
and.
The one that Beth sent us, we've about wore the handle out of.
Oh, yeah. The bottle opener from Scotland. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, let's get into the news.
Yeah. Y'all remember last time. Here we go. this is another, there's something going on again in Illinois. I don't know what it is about Illinois and things flying, but here we go, folks. There was a pterosaur observed in Wheaton, Illinois. Lon took this in and said that I recently received a telephone call from a witness called KM who describes the sighting of a cryptid winged creature. Says KM was driving on Jewel Road about half a mile west of Gary Avenue in Wheaton, Illinois, during the late afternoon on July 5th of 2019, and that he'd been helping a friend with a yard sale. Says as KM was looking ahead of him, he noticed a strange form flying in the sky at an altitude of approximately 200 feet. The profile was that of a pterosaur, in particular, the long tail with the spade on the end. Now, the head was indistinguishable because of the angle, but the wings were wide and similar to the classic form. The creature was dark in color and propelled itself with slow, deliberate wing flaps. So now we've got the flapping of the wings, right?
Right, yeah.
We've talked about some, you see a lot of them, we talk about gliding where there's no flap. This one says there's flapping of the wings. KM was able to observe the winged creature for 15 to 20 seconds and is positive that it was not a crane or a heron of which he is familiar with, or it says of which he's very familiar with. So he understands what's around him. He understands the birds you always see. Says that the wingspan was undetermined, but much wider than any known indigenous bird. And, of course, Lon talks about how this is the continuation of all these winged, like cryptid bird and winged humanoid sightings all up in the upper Midwest and throughout the state of Illinois and Indiana.
What's strange to me, not that this isn't strange enough, but how 12 months ago there were flying humanoid sightings everywhere, and now it seems like there's no more humanoid sightings. Now it's just pterosaurs. Or giant birds.
Yeah, some sort of giant bird. Well, and we still get a few humanoid sightings, but there does seem to be like it's like those guys are taking a break while the birds come in
and
do their thing.
What an odd flap. Or is it that, you know, people are, oh, I want to write myself a story. You know, I saw, we were at an RC shop, a hobby shop, not too long ago. We were down in Waco, and there was like a little pond in between a bunch of these chain of restaurants. And we were there, and we were waiting for a table. And in that pond, there were these guys that had these RC boats.
Mm-hmm.
And these things were hauling butt. You know, they were flying around. The boys were like, wow, that's so cool. So I was like, well, we should go to a hobby shop. I used to have RC cars. You know, I never had a boat.
Yeah.
But anyways, when we went in there, they had some RC planes and drones, of course. That's all the rage now. But two of the drones were shaped like UFOs.
Really?
And the guy showed me, like, you could control the lights and things like that. And they also had, like, a glider that was shaped like a pterosaur.
Did they really?
They really did. So, like, if you didn't know, and somebody, like, say there was a park and somebody was flying one of these pterosaur-looking gliders or flying one of these UFO-shaped drones.
And you were driving by.
And you were just driving by and you saw it, you would be like, oh, that's a pterosaur. Or, oh, my God, that's a UFO.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that's what happened.
Yeah.
But I'm saying nowadays more than ever, you got to be careful what you're seeing. Could it be misidentification?
Well, you did see that video of where those guys had built that. It was a drone, but it looked like the old hag that flies through there, almost like a witch.
Yeah, like a witch, right?
And how crazy that looked flying around. Like, it would really mess with people.
Right, so taken out of context,
yeah,
you wouldn't know what you were looking at.
I guess that's why they say they don't. It's not for sure. You know, like, everybody that reports here lately is like, I think that's what it is. Like, that's what it appeared to be. I can't say 100%. But that's what it appeared to be, because like you said, with that going on now, you wouldn't know.
Well, if you were outside with the drone that looked like a UFO, you'd hear it.
But driving by.
But in a car.
Yeah.
And that pterosaur that they had was a glider. So I'm not sure that it makes a whole lot of noise.
But even that whole, when you drive by, you don't hear those. You just look up and see them. And then especially if somebody had taken it out over the road and bringing it back to their house in the woods somewhere. It's lining up perfect to be something crazy and misidentified.
So maybe that's a possibility. Check this out. We talk about from time to time about shapeshifters, about lycanthropes, about skinwalkers. Well, this person wrote into Lon, and they talked about an experience they believe they had several times with these skinwalkers. It says, I lived in northeastern Arizona, literally about 5 miles south of the Navajo Reservation in Winslow. Naturally, being that close to the reservation or the res, skinwalkers were a huge topic of conversation amongst the locals, and we all took it very, very seriously. Stories of personal experiences abounded, and I was no different. My family had gone camping in a little spot about 50 miles or so south of a small town called Hart Canyon, near Wiggins Crossing, if you're interested. We had been there all day, and I was extremely familiar with the area. We had camped there 20 or so times before. So my parents just let me wander about alone in the woods. You have to remember this was back in the early 90s. Anyways, I had some G.I. Joes, and I'd been playing with them in a nearby creek, which happened to be located about 80 yards from our campsite. There were no other campers there around us. My mom had called me back to camp for dinner, so I left my toys there and went to go eat. Played around camp for a while, and then I realized I had forgotten my toys back at the creek. So I asked my mom if I could go get them. She said that was fine. So I took a flashlight and I headed back that way. I knew right where I had left them. So in no time, I found them and grabbed them and picked them up. As I was squatted down to grab them, though, on the edge of the water, a sudden urgency that I'd never felt before ran down my spine. I remember feeling frozen. Because of the fear, like the little boy on E.T. when that alien comes out of the field for the first time and he's trying to scream for his family. I looked up and pointed my flashlight to the other side of the creek about 10 yards down the way. That is when I saw something. So I said, what is that? I thought it was a deer at first, but then I noticed it was standing up. So I thought it may be a bear. But it was too skinny and didn't have enough poofy hair on it. It skunked behind a tree and peered out slightly at me. I seriously was too scared to move. I just read a bit about Bigfoot for the first time. And since it wasn't really popular in my area, I was kind of excited. I thought for a long time that that's what I saw. I finally had seen enough to gather my wits, and I scrammed as fast as I could back to camp. I told my parents, and they kind of dismissed it as my imagination. So I just stayed close the rest of the trip. About 2 years later, I was at my house. Now, I had two dogs. They were outside dogs only, and they lived their whole lives in my backyard. Well, one night, they went psycho. They were barking at first at something in the alley behind my house, and then they both started whimpering. I had my window open slightly, and one of my dogs straight up jumped up to the window, frantically chewed through the screen on my window, and forced its way into the house and would not leave the house for the next 3 days. Another time, when I was about 13, we used to play night games in the town, mostly because there was nothing else to do. We would walk around our neighborhood and act suspicious so the cops would come chase us around. We would run down the alleyways and hop into random folks' backyards to hide. Now, it was extremely common to see an intoxicated Navajo or Hopi in the alley. So, it was no big deal to see one in the alley behind my house one night, as we, being two of my friends and myself, ran from the police car that was hot on our trail. We saw him plain as day standing in our way. We ran around him and jumped into the nearest yard to hide. We waited for the cop to pass us and hopped back out. Literally, about 3 minutes went by. We ran back the way we came, and as we got to the point where the drunk man had been, he was gone. In his place was a coyote, just sitting there, watching us. We ran right past it. I mean, feet from this thing. And anyone who knows coyotes knows they will bail out way before you get close to them. This booger held his ground and calmly sat and watched us run past him. We all freaked out, and we stayed inside for a couple weeks after that. My last experience I believe I had with a skinwalker was when I was about 15 or 16. My brother has a girlfriend that lived in a small community south of Winslow called Starlight Pines, which is about 25 miles away. Well, we went to go see her one day, and as we drove out about 15 miles out, we saw a native guy standing on the side of the road. This was quite odd because the res was north of town, and it was rare to see anyone on foot south of town because it's just desert and forest and literally 80 miles of nothingness. Anyways, we saw this guy, and he looked normal enough, flannel shirt and jeans, you know, and we got to our destination and hung out with my brother's girlfriend and her family well into the night when we decided to head back home. We hopped in his truck, which happened to be a Chevy S10, and drove back the way we came. And in the same spot, we saw the native dude. He was still there. I remember thinking, that dude is crazy, standing out there all day into the night. What the hell is he doing? Right as we passed by him, we heard a loud bang on the back of the truck. At first, I thought we hit an animal, but I hadn't felt anything that we'd run over. I turned around and looked out the back window. My brother started to slow down, thinking there may be something wrong with the truck. In the brake lights, I see the native guy chasing after us. Now, we're easily going 55 to 60 miles an hour at this point, and we were about to stop. This guy is in the middle of the road, feet behind us. I scream to my brother not to stop. Gun it, man, gun it. He does, and then being a Chevy S10, it had a speed governor on it at 80.2 miles. This guy keeps up with us. We are seriously freaking out. I asked my brother, what if we don't make it back to town? Or what about when we have to slow down once we get close? After about 2 miles that stretched forever, I looked back and he was finally gone. We got home, booked it into the house, and told our parents. The next morning, I get up to head somewhere and look at my brother's truck, thinking about the night before. I wondered what the loud bang was just before we started getting chased by this guy. Inspecting the truck, I found a handprint smeared in the dust from about 2/3 over to the right, then smeared to the right tailgate. I never went there again. So what do you think of that?
Well, first of all I could think of was the minute you started talking, I could hear the Eagles playing in my head saying I was standing on the corner of Winslow, Arizona. Yeah.
But, you know, oddly enough, this is not the first time I've heard of a Native American chasing a car. Like the spirit of a Native American, or whether it's a physical thing. I'm trying to remember months or years ago, I did an episode about like crazy experiences on a stretch of road.
Yep.
And one of them was a Native American spirit that would like run alongside the car, even if you're going 60, 70 miles an hour. So,
but why is it the idea of skinwalkers, like shape changers? I dig that.
Cause it's cool.
But I mean, but it almost like, yeah, I could see that happening. Like, there's no way it could happen. But, like, I mean, physically? You don't believe you could
just morph into a coyote?
Like, physically, where your clothes go?
Where was your clothes go?
Where, I mean, like, you're just minute. Where's your, like, they don't ever find the, like, if you were ever to say that you saw somebody, like, had to be a skinwalker because where they were sitting, their clothes were just, like, empty, laying in the sand, and this coyote was there, then I'd be like, oh, damn. But like, just, I don't know. I like the whole idea of the skinwalker though.
I think it's a cool story.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
because it's like you said, we've also talked about the Skinwalker Ranch. There's a, I mean, there's a lot of, like, even the one I told you my dad's friend talked about.
Now, that story is one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's just insanity. So, okay, listen, before we go into this whole deal, I got to tell you this, all right? Because you brought up the whole Predator thing again, the Glimmer Man, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There was a Glimmer Man encounter posted on Cryptozoology News. Let's say it's Predator-like humanoid. It took place in California, in Cali, right?
Uh-huh.
And it goes on to say that the story I'm about to tell you is from my parents that have told me it several times. Now, my name is Adam. I'm in my 30s. And my father's retired. And, well, my mother works, but I don't really want to tell you what she does at this time. Now, she's in her 60s. My father's now in his 70s. Now, back in the day, he used to work for Boeing. He worked on building the planes, the 737s. He said he was also a truck driver before he retired. So, and he says, anyway, the house that we lived in was a rental before it went up for sale. And the area was a residential street, but very calm, not many cars to drive through it. And everyone usually stayed indoors or was at work, so there wasn't a whole lot of activity in our neighborhood. He says, we moved in about 1997 and moved out sometime in 2011 due to some personal reasons. It says that there was a pine tree in the front yard and a row of bushes on the opposite side of the driveway across from the pine tree. Now, these bushes went down and along to the curb before we cut them down. And they were about 6 feet tall and had sort of a pathway in between them, but it was a little dense. It says this was around the year 2000. He said on a Saturday, he said, I'm not really sure of the date, but it was a Saturday afternoon. Says, my dad was working on the side of the house, drilling holes for anchors to put a new gate up because the old one, of course, had fallen down. Said my mother had come out to see the, you know, out of the house to see the progress and how we were doing. Said she came out and said that she thought she saw something move from the side of our garage that was there in front of that pine tree and go right across our driveway. But she blew it off and proceeded around the cars and to the side of the house where my dad was. He said, now, my father, of course, drilling the holes, but my mother got his attention. And he said he was in the crouched position. And as he turned around, he said, to his right, that he noticed something strange in his peripheral vision. He said, now, after seeing that strange thing, he went ahead and turned completely around. He said that's when he saw something move, pushing the bushes apart, and then they swayed back together and was gone. He said his immediate reaction was, what was that? Did you see that? Asked my mother if she had seen anything. He said, then he settled himself down because he said, well, I don't want my wife to think I'm going crazy. And said that she would just tease him about it later anyway. So he says that my father is more open-minded and inclined to the supernatural, UFOs and things. And he says that his father and he have both seen, like, UFOs. Now, he goes on to say that my mother's extremely skeptical and that these sort of things she just doesn't want anything to do with. So my dad just tried to shrug it off before my mom could start teasing him, but that she confirmed she had seen what he had seen. So she pushed him to go see what it was and see if it was gone and look for footprints and, you know, everything, like a wife pushing a husband to go to his death, right? You know, that's what's going to happen. Says it was tall, but it was hunched over. It was like a bubble of water around it. I don't know if it was weird. I don't know if it was weird. Well, that's what they said. I don't know if it was weird. Well, it was weird. Said it moved so fast, but it also moved as if it was just gliding. That's what the mother said. Said it was like you're looking at something, but your eyes cannot adjust. You're looking and it's blurring to the viewpoint, like you're trying to focus or see past it. It was like something was there, but I couldn't tell because my eyes weren't really settling on it. And this is what the father said. It was like the Predator when he goes invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I says, we've talked about this several times and my mother doesn't even want to think about it anymore. And my dad just wonders, you know, what did it want? How long was it there watching them? Where did it go? And where did it come from? My parents both think that it was watching them. My dad said that almost like it noticed he was going to turn around and that's when it saw the motion. That's when it left. And it was like, whoop, he's going to notice me. Said they don't know, you know, of anything of what it was. Said my mom said that she had seen it before in the morning, before that she was going to work one time in the rearview mirror. But she didn't think much about it, just that maybe she'd just kind of, you know, seen something. Just like, oh, it's nothing. I just, my eyes played a trick on me. So you got to imagine seeing it before backing out this glimmer. So that tells me it's been hanging around their house. Says my brother-in-law cut down that tree that would cause the sap to get on the cars and all the pine needles. And he cut down the bushes, not because of the incident, because, of course, it would make easier yard work. Said I couldn't get any of the pictures from 2000 because Google wouldn't go back that far. But as I described, the bushes were cut all the way down to the curb. and all this as it goes on. He goes on to say that the location is in West Covina, California. Says, I blurred the street name and some of the cars that we used to own as to the exact location. I do not wish to disclose. So you can go in there and see what the house looks like. It doesn't show you anything. I mean, you know, it just, it's that. But so this guy claims that he and his family had a glimmer man lingering around their home for more than one visitation.
That's not cool.
No. So, yeah. Because
then you got to put all the mud all over you. You know, so that it can't see you.
Right. You have to make a bow
and make some spears.
You got to pull up a big tree stump up in the tree where it'll swing down or drop down.
You got to take a bunch of fireworks or hand grenades and open them up and combine all the black powder, you know, so you can make homemade.
And a bunch of your friends are going to die.
Yeah. Right.
It's just not good. Just not good all the way around if they're hanging out at your house. You just don't want that. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to be discussing some experiences that happened to Mr. Rocky Elmore about some of the crazy things he saw as being a Border Patrol agent. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, let's dive into this, folks. This is one of those that I've been sitting on, and I think I've alluded to a few times. This book, I found out about this book, it's probably been a year or so ago when I was doing some research, and this book and this name popped up, so I ordered the book and read the book and then had kind of forgotten about it. You know, I was like, oh, that was awesome. It was great. There's cool stuff. I put it up. And then I had received a few emails 6-8 months ago, I guess, maybe. Yeah, it was back before Christmas last year. So maybe almost a year ago from a buddy of mine who had a friend that was a Border Patrol agent. And I had actually known a fellow that was a Border Patrol. I've known a couple of Border Patrol agents. And what was funny was when I spoke to them, the one that I knew very well, I used to shoot a lot of competitive archery with him. It didn't seem like, and then even some of the men that I've talked to here that have served down, you know, doing some border, you know, protection stuff, it is. And then of course what's going on in the news and all that stuff today, it's a very different thing than what most like law enforcement is. You got to imagine, there's no way, I don't even know if I would have the nerve to do, like, I know I couldn't be a law enforcement agent. There's no way. I don't have the temperament. I don't have the patience for that kind of stuff. I don't like being lied to. And I just don't know if I would have the nerve to be a Border Patrol agent with the fact of, I mean, like, you start looking into it, like, for what we think it is and what it is, like, it's, you're not, you know, these guys are out in the dark, lots of times by themselves for the most part. If they have a partner with them, of course, they're in separate vehicles or they'll be stationed very far apart. And, of course, now it's a bigger deal than it was and all this. But you take yourself back, like we've always talked about with other jobs or the things, you back it up. Take yourself back to being a Border Patrol agent in the 70s and the 80s. Imagine even being in the 90s as compared to today. It's not even the same thing. There is so much that can go wrong. There is being in Texas, Mexico and Texas. It's been hand in hand. Like our histories are interwoven. Our culture is very Hispanic. The food, I mean, the Hispanic culture in Texas is very large. It's something like even growing up, I never thought anything of it. I thought everybody was kind of that way. You know, it wasn't until much older, you know, as you grow up that you realize like, oh, okay, there's other influences in other states and other areas that are German influenced or that are, you know, or French Creole, you know, influenced, things along those lines. You're like, oh, I get it now. You know, I thought everybody had this because you don't know, you know, growing up back in the 80s, you don't really have an idea of it until as you get older. So Border Patrol things and learning about Texas history and learning about how wild the borders have always been along Texas and Mexico And then as I got older, you know, learning about the borders between Arizona and Mexico and California and Mexico, there's always been a bit of a lawless band. And I believe, like I've referred to in the past, it's called the Nueche Strip that runs between Texas and Mexico. And there is a strip of land on both sides of the border that's pretty much remained like it was for the last 200 years, kind of like a wild border towns like you would see in the old Western movies and television shows. So, because it's so easy to commit crimes on either side and hop back and forth and be free of what side you've been on and hide, you know, and it's just, it's a really strange thing. It's a really hard thing that we, I know I don't think about it, you know, that often. And then you're like, you know, why can't you do this? Because we kind of like, I know American citizens especially, we kind of like a plotted fix. Like we're so used to being, all right, there's the problem. We address it and this is how it's going to be. And it doesn't necessarily ever, if ever, work out that way. So this Border Patrol stuff has always fascinated me because of where it's at. Deep Southwest Texas, you know, it's out in the desert areas. You see this and it's, I don't know. I don't know why I've been so drawn to it. I don't know why I'm like always, I think about it, you know, just like a lot of the military people that serve. And you think about these times of being out in the dark and being out there by yourself. But it's an unnerving thing. So this book, when it popped up on my radar and I got it, you know, and like I said, I read it, I was fascinated with it. And the book is written by a fella named Rocky Elmore. And I would urge all of you to check it out. I may actually try to get Rocky to come on. I may reach out to him. He's done some interviews in the past, over the past 4 or 5 years, about this book and some of his stories. And I may reach out to him. But the book is called Out on Foot. And it's nightly patrols and ghostly tales of a U.S. Border Patrol agent. And I think the thing I really appreciate the way Rocky wrote it was he even says, he was an agent in the early 90s. He talks about how he wish that he could tell all the stories, but you can't. Like there's certain stories you just can't tell. There's things you cannot share. You know, I do for the law, do for a lot of things. I'm sure there's more of a classified things like, cause we don't know, you know, you always think about the things that you see on TV. Like we laugh about the stuff that they let us see. Imagine how old those things are. I'm grateful to all you that always send me the videos and links to the robots, Instagram, Facebook, all this stuff. You send me all these things of links to all the robots and how they're acting. I'm always like, I always think to myself, is awesome and crazy and they're probably going to end up taking over the world. That's the stuff that they let out. Like, we don't even know what's really going on. That's probably 10 years behind. Well, it's like that in all professions, whether it's, you know, especially when you deal with the public. And any of you that deal with the public knows there's certain things the public doesn't get to know. You would even know that, you know, as a private entity, if you know, you had a lawn mowing crew, there were certain things that you just don't tell the people that you do work for. It's everybody keeps a little bit of a secret of what they're going on. So the Border Patrol is no different than anything else, except that they may actually have, I don't know. To me, it seems almost more like life or death than a traffic stop. And I know I don't know. I have no idea. Like I said, I couldn't be a cop, but this book really does. It's an unnerving book. Whenever you start reading some of the stuff that the things that have happened to him, the things that he's been involved in, and then some of these stories that I'm going to get into that he shares with us. But there's a couple of stories in particular that really drew me in. And one of them goes back to, and it's the one I'm going to talk about, the one I'm going to discuss with y'all. One of them goes back to, and he even talks about in the book, how he did some research into this topic, trying to put a finger on what he had seen and what other people had seen and what they'd been involved with out there. And I believe that in law enforcement, I don't know, but I believe this, and some of the books I've read and the people I've spoken to, is much like pilots, let's say, much like the encounters that airplane pilots and helicopter pilots have with these unknown objects in space, up in the sky, rather. I think that, at least it seems this way, that the patrolman and law officers have this almost this same code of silence with certain things that they see. Like, they don't go around bragging about, oh yeah, you know, we were making an arrest and, you know, we got called over there. And when we left there, we got called into like an old home, like an old abandoned house that somebody might've been squatting in, and we encountered a ghost, and that's just the way it is, you know, and they just play it off. It doesn't seem like they talk this way. They don't share that kind of information. And as freely as all of you that are listening to this show, as freely as all of us share these stories and share these feelings and this information, I think sometimes we forget that not everybody shares that openness and that part of their open, you know, opening their mind to it. They would just as soon leave it alone and not ever discuss it. And that's a shame because, like we've said in the past, we lose a lot of great stories. We lose a lot of insight to things that might be going on because we don't openly discuss these things enough. We all do. Everyone out there right now listening, we all do. But it's not that way for everybody. We're a very minute group overall. So, you know, kudos to Rocky and all those people that came forward and spoke to him while he was working and allowed us to kind of get an insight and a glimpse to that and understand maybe some of the creepiness that goes on down there on the border. Now, one of the first things that he talks about, well, I'll say one of the first things, one of the stories that he talks about is what he calls the little girl in white. Now, instantly, every time I think about along the border or down in Mexico and, you know, the lady in white, La Llorona, you think about this, I always think about that story of La Llorona. And I think how unnerving it would be. It's one thing to see a haunted, like a ghost or something in a house or an old building, but I don't know why it seems scarier to me if I was to come across that in the woods or out in the desert, like why that would be so disturbing. But so he tells a story of one of his buddies that he names Charlie. And Charlie, he refers to Charlie in the book as Old Patrol, which means he had been around. You know, and we all have that reverence for people that have done the job that we're doing for quite some time. They're like the old guard. That's the way you look at it, right? That's the way we think of them. And I think military and law enforcement personnel are no different. First responders are no different. You look at it as going to combat. And when you've been there for quite some time, 15, 20, 20 plus years, you look at them with a little bit more reverence of the things that they discuss. So Rocky was a Border Patrol agent down by the Otay Mountains in San Diego. And he, like I said, I think he retired from there. But in one of the stories, he's talking about Charlie, his buddy Charlie, and how Charlie finally just decided, I don't really know what brought it up, how it all got going. That's why I'd like to talk to Rocky and really dig into it. But Charlie tells the story that he said that he and a buddy of his years before, while he's talking to Rocky now, saying years before this conversation, said a buddy of mine and I was on a road, and they call the road like Chicken Ranch Road, I believe is what it was. And it's near the Otay truck trail down there. Now, for those of you that live in California, some of y'all probably know where all these areas are down some of this stuff, because it seems to be BLM land. It seems to be a bunch of public land that you could probably hike on and move around. When I say BLM, that's Bureau of Land Management, folks. There's a lot of BLM land on public hunting lands and hiking and camping areas and certain BLM lands that you can't go on to. But so Charlie tells the story that him and his buddy that they're actually, I guess, partnered up. And so they're in the truck together and they're driving this area. And of course, wouldn't you know it, which here's a funny part of the story, it's around 3 o'clock in the morning when this sighting goes down. So they said there's these roads meeting. I picture the crossroads, but it sounds like one road kind of tees into another road. And where it tees into this road at, there's a giant oak tree that sits down there. And like, you know, we have them around here. I don't know what it is. See, that's just part of the romanticized part of the story that I enjoy, is the idea that this old tree is seen a lot. This old tree may have been here for several hundred years, probably served as, you know, protection from the rains and a campsite situation multiple times from people living down in that part of the world. And, you know, way before the cities we have, like back when they were just little towns or even little villages, before they ever grew to what they are now. So Charlie and his buddy are both sitting there, and you can imagine drinking a little coffee, sitting there in the total darkness, just listening, just hanging out, just waiting for the radio to chime, waiting for anything to go down out of the ordinary where they have to spring into action, just hanging out. Now you can't be carrying on a conversation. You can't be, you know, chatting it up. You have to be quiet. You know, it's funny how far sound actually carries out outside sometimes. And it's also funny how far it won't carry. I mean, it's just saying that is kind of weird. But yeah, it is. There's times that you would yell at someone that's outside and, you know, you're trying to get their attention 100 yards or so away from you. They can't hear you. When as sometimes you'll hear low murmured conversations that may be just as far away. Like it's very strange how that works. But so Charlie and his buddy are chilling in the truck. And Charlie said around 3 o'clock, they're there. And he said that they got a real weird feeling. And he said he's getting this kind of antsy, almost like an anxiety, antsy feeling. You know, you get kind of flicked on. And then his Charlie's buddy gets the same feeling. Now, he said both of them get that weird feeling. He said they can both kind of tell something's not right. And they get to looking around together, looking around. And they get the feeling, look at the tree, which is weird. So their attention is immediately drawn to that giant tree. Now, what he says next is the thing that's very unnerving. You could only imagine. He says standing underneath the tree is a little girl. Can't be more than about 3 years old in a white gown, little white gown that she's wearing. She said she's standing right beside the trunk of the tree. And her eyes are dead fixed right on Charlie and his partner, staring into the vehicle, looking right at him. And that she was completely alone. Now, right then, even telling this story gives me the chills. Just thinking about her just dead eye staring across an open expanse in the dark right at you. Well, Charlie said, hey, man, I also noticed right then that there was a glow, like a faint aura around her body. So right then, they both knew, hey, she's not really there. Like, she's not alive. And they also said that she was dressed, not of this time period, and that they were so far away from any place, it was so remote, there's no way she could have gotten there. So that she was just, they knew for a fact that they were seeing a ghost. Now, Charlie said that neither one of them could speak. They were just frozen, staring at this thing, staring back at them. And they started getting these strong, and they lingered with them for a while, but very strong feelings of that anxiety growing inside them and of a heavy sadness. Like very emotionally upset. And they said, as they stared at this girl, she slowly faded till she was gone. Completely out of sight. Nothing. Now, of course, Rocky hearing that, he said it clicked his memories that several years before that, there was another agent friend of his in that area, all worked the same unit. Name agent, he calls him Agent Thomas. And again, it's around 3 a.m. Now, he said that Thomas, you know, PA Thomas, Patrol Agent Thomas, was working the midnight shift. And apparently they have some sensors and that they put these in. And I'm assuming there's some sort of motion sensor or something. I'm not sure, you know, how this actually works, how you wouldn't know it was animals unless I guess maybe it's set at a certain height, 5 foot and above. You know, you would think that it would set off, but whatever it is. So there's somewhere these sensors are down in what they call Mine Canyon. So Rocky says that while he had been talking to Agent Thomas, that Agent Thomas goes, hey, you know, we're going to go in here. His partner also called in, said, hey, we're going in there. Not Rocky, but Agent Thomas and Agent Thomas's partner, separate vehicles. But they're like, all right, we're going to go in there and check those sensors. So Thomas, he doesn't wait for his buddy, right, which they always tell you take your partner, but how hard would it be to wait whenever you're all keyed up? I'm sure a ridiculous amount. So the story goes that Thomas doesn't wait, and he slips off in these canyons, starts making his way down into Mine Canyon. Now, mind you, in the dark, solo hiking up on this ridge, making his way down in there. Now, he had a spot always picked at him that he would always go to, just a normal routine. He likes to slip in this certain area in the dark, settle in, and then he watches and he waits. And then, of course, I'm sure you got to use – some have night vision, of course, back then. I'm sure it's way more popular now. But also, you think about your hearing. I'm sure you'd use your hearing an immense amount to hear the kicking of rocks, you know, the chatter if they were speaking. But more than likely, they're walking. They're just – you're trying to listen to that. And it's funny. We've brought it up before. The cadence of the way a human being walks in the woods is different than anything else. You can hear that rhythm. It's almost like we have a rhythm in everything we do. So even in the dark, you can tell more than likely that's a person. So Agent Thomas digs in, right? Sets up, he's watching, he's waiting. He said, man, minutes go by, right? Nothing's going on. Nothing's out of the ordinary. Nothing strange. Just hanging out. Several minutes go by. And he said, he looks up and he notices somebody coming down the ridgeline wearing all white. And Agent Thomas goes on, you know, he's trying to rationalize in his head, like, who's the dummy out here in the dark thinking they're being sneaky? You know, you're trying to get past the Border Patrol agents at 3 o'clock in the morning wearing a white t-shirt. Like, that's really what you're going to do out here. And like, maybe you just forgot to cover it up. Maybe you just didn't think anything of it. Maybe you're just arrogant, whatever it is. That's what they're trying to go on. So, you know, Agent Thomas, he can't believe it. He's like, I don't even know what the heck is going on. So he says that he starts kind of making his way down where he can get a clearer look. That's when he realized, and he keeps watching it, thinking, you know, I'm going to get a better look. That's going to come back. And he keeps watching this figure, and the figure gets a little closer and starts passing by. And he realizes at that point that it was a little girl wearing a white nightgown. Now, he went on to say that it could have been a dress, could have been a little, you know, a white dress, but it looked more like, you know, an evening gown thing, or like a sleep gown, rather, like even what Charlie and his friend had reported. And he said that not only that, but there seemed to be a slight aura or glow around her as she went down the trail. So he realizes at this point, hey, look, we're way out here away from everything. It's in the middle of the night / middle of the morning. Nobody's around. There's this little girl, this small child, that there's no reason she should be out here. There's nobody with her. My partner's not back yet. I better go help her. So he doesn't put two and two together. Thomas doesn't, about could it have possibly been, is it a, you know, an entity, or is this a person? He just, you know, first responder training kicks in. I got to help her. Takes off, makes his way, of course, in the dark down there. Now, he's trying to rationalize as he's going down how she's making her way through these trails in the dark with no lights, right? Like, how is this even going down? Now, you can imagine, folks, that if you've been out away from light pollution, way out in the country or way out driving somewhere and you've stopped on the side of the road, and if it's a full moon or even a half moon, you'd be surprised at how much you can really see once your eyes get adjusted when you're out there. Like, they'll pick up quite a bit of light. So he's working his way down there. He's like, there's no way this little kid should be out here. I've got to get her off the mountain. I don't know what's going on, right? Works his way down, gets down on the trail, starts heading that way, sees the little girl. And now he's running down the trail to catch up with her. Before he can get to her, Kaiser Sozied, vanished right off the trail, right in front of him. Now, the very next thing that he brings up is very, very weird. It's very disturbing. Said that the minute she vanished, fell into like sadness and depression, and said that Agent Thomas starts crying, sits down on the trail and weeps, crying. It's like the leftover sadness of this child's life when she vanishes spreads like a shockwave around her. And it hits those, you know, that may have been involved, and he's devastated. You know, he just can't deal with it. The whole deal has to come back, starts telling people what had happened, you know, and they even say it took a little bit for him to shake it off. It took a few weeks for him to get over, which is strange. Like, it's not just having that encounter. It's having that encounter with that residual energy. And I guess that's what it is when people are talking about like energy, negative and positive, like it's a wave of some sort of sad negative energy. So it took a few weeks to get that out of his system. Now, apparently, This is the next one that they talk about. There is a thing called Marin Valley Road, and they keep these gates locked to keep the public out in these areas. So there's certain areas along this one road that's got double gates. Now, Rocky tells a story that there is a female field operations supervisor by the last name of Milano, and that Milano's there, and that she is talking about these gates. And I guess it's kind of like water cooler talk. And she says, look, I avoid messing around with these gates every amount I can. Like, I want no part of being involved in this whole gate along this road thing. Now, she went on to say that it feels like somebody is always watching. Like, every time you stop, get out to unlock this gate at night, you have to unlock it, drive through, close it, drive down the next, you know, there's divided off parts of the road. She said, man, every time you get out, it just feels like somebody's there in the dark watching you. And then she went on to later say that she's even had what she could feel were cold spots pass through her body while she was there fiddling with that gate. So she didn't want no part of it, right? Well, while this story's going on, she's telling Rocky and they're all hanging out, there's another field operations supervisor with the last name of Salinetti. And Salinetti goes on to say the same thing, says, hey, look, I completely agree. Whatever's out there, it feels dark. Like, it feels unnerving and not right. There's something definitely going on around that gate. And that they, Salinetti said that the same thing, that I've had what I, on the Otay truck trail, said I've had an apparition pass me, walk right by me, like some sort of glowing something or other, be right there while I'm fiddling around with the gate. So right there, you're like, well, then there's something went down. Like we've talked about with Gettysburg, with lots of, something has gone down in the darkness in that spot, 100%. There's no argument about that. Something crazy went down there. But it gets worse at this gate. There is a story that he relays that is at the gate. This is one of those ones that'll really give you the heebie-jeebies. Back then, they had to train for night vision scope operators. I'm sure you've got to imagine, you know, we're talking about in the early 90s. You have to imagine what those would have cost. I'd seen some in the late 90s, early 2000s that were turds at best, the way they worked. So you could imagine if you wanted a top of the line, they were probably all military grade. You had to have the budget money, all that stuff. So they didn't just give them out to each and every officer, much like they do now. Because, of course, we all know the technology's better. They're a lot cheaper. I mean, you're talking about buying really, really nice night vision scopes for rifles these days. You could go buy it. You can spend $3,000 and buy one that people would have paid $30,000 for 20 years ago. I mean, like, they've made leaps and bounds like everything else. So this one fella was a field scope operator and had the training and had done all this stuff. So that's who Rocky was talking about. And it doesn't give the person's name, but he goes on to say this, and this is bad. This dude had no idea about the stories about the gate, about the stories of the little girl in white. This guy's completely unaware, just dee-dee-dee-dee, going about my business. This would have been me. This, like I've told y'all so many times, that I don't have that link. Like, everybody's like, oh, you know, I can feel it, or I know when there's evil things and stuff. They're like, not me. I'm just a dummy. Like, I should probably wear a helmet when I walk around town. That's going to be me. Working, this would be me, just DD. I got the night vision scope, you know, I'm cool, I'm gonna go out and do some looking in the dark, you know, and all this stuff. Of course, there's probably some big mule deer down there, so I'd be looking at through the night vision scope of those and get in trouble for not paying attention. But this poor guy, he gets out to unlock the very first gate, which the first gate happens to be the scary gate. You know, the first gate we'll call Ghost Gate. The second gate, no big deal, you know, if you ain't first, you're last. So the second gate's just a joke. So the first gate is where all the shenanigans go down. So this fella jumps out, like I say, completely unaware of what's going on, and he's bebopping towards the gate, got his keys out. He's ready to rock and roll. Whammo, right to his left, instantly in the edge, the periphery of the headlight, in the ditch, standing in the brush, bump, there's the little girl in white, okay? But she steps out. steps out, and I'm holding my arm out thinking right now about how tall she would be, and I'm picturing like maybe a little bit shorter than my great niece. So, I mean, oof. Yeah, so we're talking about little girl in white, middle of the desert, nowhere. You have no idea this is going on. Steps out. Here's the worst part, folks. She was faceless. No face. That's right. Glowing apparition of a child in white, faceless, steps out. Well, this dude, as you can imagine, he doesn't necessarily take it all in stride. He pretty much freaks out. I'm not hating. I am not hating. I am not judging. This guy takes off back, just out of his mind, back to the truck, gets in the truck, throws it in reverse, stands on it. As he's racing to get out away from that part of the road area, loses control of the vehicle, trying to get back to the main, you know, the main office, loses control of the vehicle, wrecks out the truck. Not only does he wreck out the truck, but he does some pretty rough damage to the night vision scope that he's assigned. Yeah, so this guy's broke a truck, broke the scope. He's pretty much pooed the bed at this point. Goes on, Rocky goes on to state that 3 days after this sighting, and they get everything cleared up. Now, that's why I want to talk to Rocky. I want to know what this guy did after he wrecked the truck. Because would you get out? Would you get out and start making your way down the road with your busted-ass night vision scope in the dark with a little faceless girl behind you? Nope, I would roll them up, have the windows up, be weeping. Yeah, so it's one of those deals. So 3 days after this all goes down, the fella comes back in and turns in his keys and quits, completely resigns. He did not know about it, and he does not ever want to know about it, and the Border Patrol agent left, had nothing else to do with the whole place. So that tells you there must have been a thing, man, whatever has happened. Like we've discussed, whether you think it's real or not, it affects people. So the people that it happens to, when they believe it affects them to their core. This is one of those guys, I wish I could follow up with the guy that had that encounter. Because I would like to know. He probably wouldn't talk about it if it's affected him that much, but I would like to know how it's affected his life and his sensibilities from that day forward, having an encounter with something along those lines. So you fast forward a few years, right? Go back through the whole thing. Like I said, when Rocky started hearing about this, he says that he had started researching more about it, trying to find out. And he said that there were murders in the area. There was a ranch down in that area where the ranch foreman and his family were actually murdered by smugglers back in the 70s. So drug smugglers come across the area, this, that, and the other. There's really wild stuff. There were stories about Mexican bandits and the Native Americans down in that area back in the early 1800s had raided a ranch area down there and killed a bunch of people and took a bunch of the daughters and left. One of the little daughters was the last one left alive, allegedly. You know, as you get into history, it was the last one, and they just left her there. And, I mean, there's, of course, you know, you hear all this. Some of it's folklore, some of it's true, a bit of both probably, as you roll it together. But either way, he couldn't find a put-your-finger-on-it moment of this is exactly what happened. This is the moment where the little girl was lost. So with that going down, he said he started talking and asking around and talked to a few other people, but then he starts going on to what happened to him. And he said that he had a partner, and his buddy was named Sal, and he and Sal were on, you know, patrols together and all this stuff, different vehicles, separate vehicles, of course, but on patrols together. And, you know, both of them field agents, of course, so they're both out monkeying around. And they said that an evening came on and that their shift, you know, was about to come to the end, and they were headed back to the station. So as they're headed back, he's like, Sal was ahead of him a little bit, you know, and they're both driving back in, and they're leaving that Marin Valley Road near El Cajon. And he said that the El Cajon unit, rather, was the group of guys. There was two El Cajons, I guess is the way somehow that they call their, I guess they name off their units in a certain way. But either way, which is another cool thing about that book, this book, before I get too crazy about it, is he gives you a breakdown of what like radio codes mean and what the verbiage and terminology means. I mean, he gives you good insight. And so while he's talking and telling the story, it kind of pulls you in. So you feel like you understand what he's talking about, like it's, you get the flow of the whole story. So he's talking about this dude, or these other two patrol agents, and they're like the El Cajon unit, and they're coming in and they're driving down the road. So they're passing each other, right? And of course there's a peak that this El Cajon unit, he said, is going to, which this sounds like an awesome peak, Tecate Peak. You know, you go up there and drink your Tecate beer on Tecate Peak. I'm like, I'm down with that. And he said he passes the first guy, Rocky did, and he said he was too far away. They just kind of wave at each other. They're too far apart, you know, to be able to speak as they're going in and, you know, going through their access point and all that stuff. And he said, now a couple of miles down that road, said he passes through the gates and he catches back up with Sal. Now his buddy Sal is pulled over, just chilling, parked on the side of the road. So he pulls up and he's like, hey, bro, what's going on? Everything okay? And he said, Sal seems to be like, got this real heavy, like burdened thought on his face. Like, he's like, man, yeah, I guess. And he goes, well, what happened? He goes, man, let me tell you this. He said, the El Cajon unit that just came through, right? And he goes, yeah, he goes up here by the first. He said, when I get up there, we roll the windows down, we're talking. He said, the very first dude that I was chatting with, and he doesn't give his name, but that agent sat there, said he told Sal that he had just gotten out of his vehicle, and again, folks, walked over to the gate. And he gets over to the gate, and he said, there's a little girl down in this little wash, and I'm assuming it's holding water down there because she's floating face down in the water. And so, and he said, she's wearing a white nightgown. So there is a 3 or 4 year old little baby girl dead face down in the water, and he panics, right? So he scrambles to the truck, grabs the mic to call for help, steps around to look down at the creek, and she's not there. So he said he kind of froze, and he looks around, he turns around, and she's standing behind him beside the vehicle, staring at him, dead-eyed, just like in the very first story. This time she's not faceless, nothing, staring him in his eyes. The agent said that he completely locked up. He couldn't move, couldn't breathe. He literally froze in his tracks. Fear, said, gripped him so hard that he could not do anything. Diaphragm froze, couldn't even take a breath. Said it couldn't have been more than 2 or 3 seconds. She was gone. Completely vanished right in front of him. And then now this fella has to get back in the truck, well, go unlock the gate, back in the truck, and go about his job like nothing had happened. So I'm assuming, given what Rocky had stated, this fella knew nothing about these sightings that were going on there either. So there's a little bit of the girl in white. And like I said, there's some other stories that you can dig into. It gets into, I have a whole nother group of stories that Rocky tells about a possible phantom border patrol agent that he knew that was down in this area. And I'm going to get into that on this week's Elite Show. But I hope you enjoyed these stories. I urge you to pick up the book. And like I said, I'm going to try to get Rocky on. Out on Foot by Rocky Elmore. Nightly Patrols and Ghostly Tales of a U.S. Border Patrol Agent. Let's take a quick break. We'll get back and we'll knock this puppy out. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And those right there are one of the many laundry list of reasons, long as a well rope list of reasons, that I will never become a Border Patrol agent.
Man, it's got to be a scary job. I've met a few guys that have done that.
Yes.
And most people don't think like that it's quite dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all types of people, not just smuggling themselves into the country, to live here, but just like mules carrying drugs. There's drug dealers. And I mean, it could be a dangerous job. And usually it's one or two guys alone with several miles to patrol on their own.
In the total darkness.
In the total darkness.
Yeah, because you can't be walking around with your flashlights open and all that stuff all the time. I knew a couple whenever we hunted down there in Southwest Texas. And, mm-hmm. you know, we'd run into them. They'd come by and eat or something like that. But it was one of those things that I would think about, like, if anybody was going to see some crazy stuff, it would be them. It's one thing, like, the game warden sees some wild animals and stuff like that. But those guys are out all the time in certain areas. And like you said, at least in Texas and the borders between Mexico and the U.S. are usually pretty rough. And that it's not like it's beautiful. Like, you're coming down through Canada. You're coming up through a desert. And it's rough and rugged and canyons and everything down there doesn't like you. So, and it's funny because those are like real old untouched areas. It's almost like that land holds a memory. Like, it still remembers some of the old creepy things that had happened in its past down there.
Yeah, it does seem that way.
Yeah.
I remember reading an article where they were talking about these narcos, like, transporting drugs. They were digging not just massive tunnels under the fence or the wall, but they were actually just using drones. And they would, like, you know, be in, like, one border, like, man's in the town that, like, borders El Paso.
Fly up and over.
They would just fly up and then just land in, like, a guy's bed of his pickup, and they'd be all – and by the time – like, if you had saw it and called the police, I mean, they're long gone. And they would just fly them over at random spots because you know how close it is.
Yeah. You can throw a rock over it. Yeah.
So, I mean, they would just – and then it would drive off, and then I guess a couple days later they'd come back and zzz, go back over. It sounds silly because it could probably only hold, like, I know, a key or two. But, I mean, it's a lot easier than getting yourself across.
Yeah, it's a lot easier.
And, like, how are you going to stop that? I mean, you know how long the border is? Not just in Texas, but Texas all the way to California? Guys with drones? I mean.
Catapults? Weren't they catapulting
what's
drugs
the other,
and people
what's the,
across?
What was the thing you showed me that you fly around?
The paramotor.
Paramotors. Yeah, check those out, folks.
Paramotors. I know they were hang gliding them over. I bet you could paramotor over those things. The problem is they're too noisy.
Well, I mean, if they would just legalize it, it would stop all that, right? I mean, that's the demand.
I don't know, but would it? I mean, they'd still be trying to
smuggle
stuff
over. It's got
to
be slow it down, I would think.
Yeah, right? I would think.
Who knows?
Yeah, so anyway, creepy stuff. And it's one of those things it's one thing to be a law officer where you have to depend on your training and yourself and the whole thing. But now, like, you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And lots of times the guys, if they're either completely alone or they have a partner, but most of the time they're split up. It's just a one man show and your partner's in another vehicle a long ways away. You know, like, you're just running solo out there and all that stuff. So,
yeah. And they find lots of people that didn't make it, like, just ran out of water or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and these people save up money for a long duration of time, pay these guys, these handlers. I don't know what they call them. And
the coyotes.
Is that what they call them? Coyotes?
Run them across the border.
Yeah. Yeah. That's.
I had read some stuff from an article one time. I may have talked about it, by the number of illegal immigrants that pass away due to, I believe it's snake bites and wild hogs, right? And just and exposure. I mean, like, it's awful.
It is. It's terrible.
Yeah, that's crazy. So yeah, working and it would just be scary like that. Of course, I'm a scaredy cat anyway. I don't need to be out there like that in the desert in the dark. Imagine scaring up a rattlesnake in the dark. Where are you going to go,
dude? That's the number one reason why I sleep in a hammock. That's right. I don't want to be on the ground.
That's right. That's right.
And I don't like the spiders. It seems like spiders are everywhere this summer. I think a good pal of mine got bit.
Mm-hmm.
By a brown recluse. And I mean, like, his arm looks like a tiger shark bit it.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
And just since that story he's relayed to me, I mean, like, I see spiders. I'm like, good God, what are you doing here? Please leave. I almost put my hand on one the other day. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah,
but what's not terrible is, dude, I have been watching a lot of live PD. I don't know why I like it. It's just like Cops, but somehow it's better.
I love it. I just love the
excuses. We text each other while watching it.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love the excuses. It's just madness, and it makes me laugh. The one I'm the most baffled about is people that run from the cops.
Because they were scared. I mean, it gives you a greater appreciation, not that I didn't already have one, for first responders, but, like, to cops especially. Like, I don't know how they do what they do. For, you know,
I would be so angry all the time.
I mean, you watch.
I'd be a cop for about 6 minutes.
I was watching one where the guy was lying to him, and the cop was like, "Well, wait a minute. Do you think this is like my first day?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've heard this story 1,000 times.
I've been doing this a long time, bro. But when they try to take off on stuff, like they run from cars, we saw that one dude run on a motorcycle. I'm like, what are you doing? And he ended up going down a dead end, and he gets off, and he's like, yeah, I know, I'm stupid.
Well, that guy was one of the few that actually admitted it, right? Like, he's like, yeah, you got me. I'm being a dummy.
Yeah.
You know, he admitted, I like the people that just deny. You don't know whose car this is? No, I don't know. You have car. A driver's license? No.
These aren't my pants.
You don't have any identification? Nope.
Nope.
Where was your last address? Ah, man, I don't remember. I just moved here. What was your address before that? Shucks, I don't remember.
You just got to keep playing it. You're off.
Like, what color is this?
They get so mad.
I think it's orange. Nope, it's green. Damn. Yeah. You're like, come on, man. You can't be. You're lying. We know you're lying.
It's like watching like a 4-year or 5-year-old try to tell you a story. You're like, come on, man. It is. It's great.
It's
it does make me laugh.
Speaking of great, I don't know if it's going to be great, but I did see the other day. I know how you are a big movie buff. They are coming out with a new version of Dune.
I will check that out.
I remember I really liked the old one. Of course, I haven't seen it in years, but when I was a kid, that was a fantastic. Yeah. It was one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I hope they don't screw it up.
I'm a big fan.
And when is the next Avatar coming out? I mean, I've been hearing about this for 10 years.
Right, yeah, I'm ready to check that out.
Is it all just urban legend, or are they actually coming out with another one?
Hey, did you like Stranger Things?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah, I liked it.
Big fan.
I will say, like, it's exactly what you expect. I hate it when you're, like, sold a bill of goods because, like, the trailer's awesome, and then you watch it, and it's nothing like that. I mean, they've been on point. Like, every season has pretty much been exactly like the first season.
So, and I love it.
If you liked season one, you're going to like season two. If you like season two, you're going to like season three.
Are you ready to watch Carnival Row?
Yeah.
I can't wait to check it out. I can't wait to see. I hope it's as good as I think it's going to be.
Man.
Folks, if y'all don't know what that is, check it out. It's going to be on Amazon Prime. I think it's got, what's his name? I just went blank. Orlando Bloom, where he's like a human detective, and he's in love with like a fairy, and she's got wings, and it's all this. Dude, it just looks crazy, but the whole thing's like the fairy realm and the human realm work together. It's going to be great. It's going to be a very interesting show. Yeah, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It can't get here fast enough.
Yeah, yeah. What do you got planned for your week?
Just hard work, clean living, man. My daughter's going to be out of town with a bunch of her friends. So, like I said, I'm taking my wife to the movies. I'll take her to dinner. I don't know what we've got planned. I know, what is it that she wanted me to do? I went blank. I hope she doesn't listen to this because I didn't write it down.
She's not listening
because I didn't write it down. There's something I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit you're supposed to do.
That's the truth. Yeah, and I've already just forgot it. So I'm going to have to drop some hints again and be like, exactly how did you want me to do what? And then she'll tell me and I'll be like, that's what it was.
Next week is our anniversary. So I know we're going to be going to dinner. But I recently went my wife's birthday. Blah, blah, blah. My wife's birthday was last week, and she likes these nothing bundt cakes, and she likes the lemon ones. Well, while I was in there, they had a new flavor. It's like praline pecan. I sampled that. I was like, dude, I got to get out of here. That is so good. It's like they sprinkled it with crack. I mean, it's so good. I don't know if they have nothing bundt cake stores everywhere.
You just people that are sat over in the corner and ate it like a homeless savage over there.
No, it's one of those things like you couldn't bring it home because if it's at the house, yeah, you'll invent reasons.
Yeah.
That, oh, man, I deserve this. You're like, I'm working hard all
day. So you got to get the little bitty one, eat it while you're there and leave. I got you. I'm down.
That's it. But if you have any crazy sightings or stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. And you can follow us on all forms of social media. Till next time, folks, be careful. Stay safe. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.